What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, who of course also covers the team for The Athletic, is Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The comeback Canucks, Strancer. They did it. Preserved their undefeated preseason record. Wow. With a 4-3 overtime win in Abbotsford against the Calgary Flames.
Honestly, I had a lot of fun watching the game. To be totally honest with you, I thought there was a lot of back and forth chances, which is not how this Canucks team typically plays, right? So I think that poses some interesting questions that we'll get into. And another thing we'll get into when we open up the headlines, it turns out, buddy, it's Daniel Sprong's world and we're all just living in it.
This is the Daniel Sprong show coming up. It's Daniel Sprong day here on the station, really, after what he did. We'll get through the whiteboard in just a second here. Sean Gentile, our pal from The Athletic, is going to join us at 12:30, and Gemma Carson Smith from the Canadian Press at 1:30. So lots to get into today. But yeah, let's go right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, September 26th. The headlines starting with the Canucks winning, as I mentioned, 4-3 in overtime against Calgary out in Abbotsford. Max Sasson opened the scoring. Jake DeBrus scored twice, including the overtime winner. But as you alluded to, the highlight of the game, Daniel Sprong tying it late with a sensational individual effort. And even before that moment, which really it was the highlight reel moment for him, obviously, he had had a very strong and a very dangerous game, right? And as we continue to kind of focus our analysis and our commentary on how is the battle for ice time going to shake out here, who's going to make the team, where are they going to line up, that was a very, very strong opening statement in his first preseason game from Daniel Sprong to demand minutes and a significant role on this team.
Daniel Sprong could have scored three goals on their first power play opportunity, missed narrowly, certainly twice, and really maybe missed a little more widely on one. Thought he had some really nice sequences, too, in the defensive zone or in the offensive zone. Excuse me. The interplay between him and Quinn Hughes was kind of funny to watch at times because Hughes is so puck dominant, right? And and for Sprong, a righty shooter playing with a high-end playmaker like Hughes, right? You could see him just sort of getting into positions to shoot, but Hughes, you know, was kind of working on some stuff, it looked like to me, right? Like he was shooting from some locations we don't typically see him attack from, and it was kind of an interesting dynamic. But, you know, at some point, as Sprong continues to show off what he can do, how he can contribute, the fun stuff that comes off of his stick offensively, he's gonna get that trust, right? It's like one of those wide receivers who's like sucking up to the quarterback. Did you hear him post game too?
Yeah, he's like, I felt like Quinn Hughes out there.
Smart. Find the best lefty playmaker on the team, Daniel Sprong, and suck up. Get invited to brunch. You need those passes. Like, this is a guy who knows how what it takes.
Be the Cooper Kupp to his Matthew Stafford. Yeah, get those targets.
Work on that shower narrative. Like, come on. You gotta be besties. So I liked that. I liked the political savvy. And then obviously the goal was incredible. Look, Daniel Sprong's a ton of fun.
I was on the postgame show with Sat last night, and one of the points I made, and you know, there's so much hype about his shot, right? And fair enough, he's got an incredible shot, even relative to the rest of the NHL. He's one of the best shooters in the league. But I thought if you hadn't spent a lot of time watching Daniel Sprong in an NHL game and really zeroing in on him, last night he really showed that he's more than a shot offensively, right? Yes. Like he's a good skater. He can handle the puck. He was trying to do some playmaking, as you said, had some good moments in the offensive zone, not off the rush as well. And I think you got a sense of, again, leaving aside the defensive side of things here, this is a guy who has a lot to offer offensively beyond just being a really dangerous shooter.
Yeah. And you know, his playmaking is really good. It's just that it lives a little bit lower than it does for most players on his decision tree relative to my shot. And that's sort of the fun part about Dennis.
Although he
Pronto.
Passed on a 2-on-1.
He did. I'm shocked.
It's almost like where you're, you know, in January after you've made a New Year's resolution and you're like really sticking to it for a couple of weeks. He's like, I better pass this. It's like, no, just shoot it.
No, you know what? Daniel Sprong is for me in that like Nikita Zadorov tier of guys the Canucks acquire. And my main reaction is like, yes, that's going to be fun. Like, you know, it's fun to watch a 6'6" guy truck people and take wild chances with the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I love watching Zadorov play. I loved watching him play in Calgary. Daniel Sprong's up there. Like Daniel Sprong is, you know, a heat check guy. Like he's, you know, skip to my Lou Williams in hockey form. And it's going to be a ton of fun to watch him play all year long.
And I think one of our early points of emphasis talking about preseason training camp has been kind of recognizing the gap between aspiring NHL players and established NHL players. And as much as he's bounced around, Daniel Sprong's an established NHL player with track record of scoring, right? And again, as much as there are concerns about his two-way game, the offensive ability is pretty unimpeachable. And I thought you saw that, right? Like we're talking about, okay, who can open up the season in the top six, whether it's alongside JT Miller and Brock Besser, whether it's alongside Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusque. And Sprong set a very high standard, right? Like that offensive capability, that game-breaking ability, I think is going to be very difficult to keep out of the lineup for the Canucks, especially with the emphasis on rush chances. And if you're a player like Lekker Mäki, not that he's been poor at all in his couple of preseason
games.
He
was quiet in game two.
That line was quiet, I thought. Yeah, it wasn't his standout performance for sure.
Except I thought DeBrusque was kind of everywhere. Like I thought it was Lekker Mäki that was quiet. I don't think it was that line.
Yeah, I don't think that line had a ton of like zone established zone time as a trio.
No,
DeBrusque ended up in key spots, but it wasn't like established. Oh, there. That was another
noticeable.
Good shift for that line.
I thought he was noticeable time in, time out. I thought Lekker Mäki was significantly quieter than he had been in game one. For me, it was like a significant gap in quality of performance. And you sort of wonder about the back to backs, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rigors of playing North American pro hockey with the condensed schedule and the travel, like that's part of the learning experience here. And, you know, I wonder if that had a role, especially coming into preseason, right? It's not like you're in November or December and you've been on the treadmill of the NHL season for a couple months. Like this is right off the hop to get thrown into back-to-back games. And I do sort of wonder what that does for his chances, given that his quieter performance came on the line that he'd be more likely to start on if he made it. It's still too early. By no means has he like missed his shot. I absolutely am not saying that, but he's going to have more performances that look like Tuesdays than Wednesdays.
Well,
for sure.
And again, the point I was making is right. You know, if the part of the theory of Lekker Mäki potentially making the team is, hey, we need somebody with some real offensive upside, some dynamic, you know, game breaking type ability. Well, Sprong has that as well, right? So it's like, well, you have to clear what Sprong is doing or at least be significantly better as a two-way player, which is a tough ask for a rookie as well. And again, it's not to say that it's impossible or that he can't do it or that maybe they see the upside in putting Lekker Mäki there to start the year and getting him that NHL experience. But again, just a good reminder of what Sprong can do. And that's a high bar for a player like Lekker Mäki in his first, you know, full pro season in North America to clear.
Yeah, no question. And the other one is, you know, that shot, even though he didn't score on it on the power play, you know, those were those sequences where it's not so much about what the Flames mm-hmm. could do to stop him. It was about whether or not he made or missed his shot. If we're being real, that's a bread and butter. Like what's a bread and butter goal for the Vancouver Canucks power play? Yeah, and you can go over the last few years, like, you know, they're Kuzmenko net front, right?
Yep.
Often from Pettersson. But after Bo Horvat left, right? Because the Bo Horvat, like, pop pass to Bo Horvat, that was a staple goal, too. And, like, last season, when you think about it, I mean, there were a ton of deflection goals, right? A lot of those went to Brock Besser. Team sort of outnumbers their opposition down low, and Besser often scores. The Pettersson one-timer, if we're being honest, hasn't been, like, a high-volume goal haul weapon for this team in a few years. So you kind of get to, like, JT Miller downhill wrist shot, which is a fabulous weapon. But has two drawbacks. One, it's a deception weapon, right? Like it leans on certain screens and it's a read through layered traffic, and Miller shoots it perfectly and credit to him, but it's not an overpowering weapon. It's a deception weapon. And then additionally, when teams are in a diamond, It's hard to get off, right? You have to spend a lot of time setting it up. You know, as Miller himself will tell you, right? Like it's really designed for when teams are in more of a skinny formation or an eye trying to take away those seam passes in the middle. That's like the perfect counter to it. I just watching that shot and then watching his skill come together late in the game. I really struggle to imagine. I know Jake DeBrusk is going to get the first look on PP1. He had a penalty that took the team off the power play last night. Not that that matters, but man, it just feels like this power play at any time of the year, you know, obviously we know it's going to be Besser. We know it's going to be Pettersson. We know it's going to be Miller. We know it's going to be Hughes. But in terms of that fifth guy, it just feels like any time this power play goes like 0-for-7 for a stretch,
yep.
Sprong's going to, you're going to start to hear those like Sprong whispers, not just from the Canucks commentariat, but I'm sure, you know, within the coach's office at Rogers Arena too.
Well, and I know you've referenced this in your reporting at The Athletic and maybe on the air here as well, but the recognition that having another right shot on the power play would be really useful, right? And of course, that's Sprong, that's Lehermäki as well. My overall takeaway from Sprong's performance, and I think this applies to the power play and even strength, was just, man, it's going to be really hard to keep that out of the lineup. If you have a guy on hand who can do things like that, there's questions. Maybe you limit his minutes, but really, are you going to keep him out of the lineup on a consistent basis? That seems tough to do. And that's a pretty good spot to be in if you're Daniel Sprong coming here on a 1-year deal.
Yeah. On the other hand, like we've been through this with Kuzmenko.
Mm-hmm.
What's the gap? What's the gap there other than, you know, $4.5 million in cap hit,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, like, well, how do you keep that much incredible individual offensive skill out of the lineup? It's like we've literally seen it play out. You know, Tocchet will find a way if the player's not doing what he needs to do. Right. That is what it is.
Yeah. And I think part of the gap has to come from Sprong demonstrating at least the right trajectory, right? Yeah. And progress, because then you can live with some of the mistakes. If you think, hey, he's bought in, he's putting in the effort, and he's at least moving in the right direction. Now, then come February, at a certain point, it's like, well, no, the results have to be good and we've got to revisit this. But I think at least early, the effort goes a long way to convincing the coach to keep you in the lineup.
Yeah. If you at least skate back, you're going to be ahead of where Kuzmenko was.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's at least one place he can put himself ahead of Kuzmenko. Okay. Other takeaways from the game. We talked about Lehermäki.
Aturatu.
Yeah. I thought Aturatu's game tailed off a little bit in the second and third. Yeah, I thought he was really good in the first period. Again, back to back.
That all line, that line in general was one of their best throughout the evening.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, that switchy move to take draws right-handed. That's smart, man. That's how you make a team.
Mm-hmm.
Ratu and Sprong, man. They spent their summers reading Machiavelli. They've got, they're on it. They're playing smart angles here to make sure they make the team. Look, I really think we've been talking about this Canucks lineup, the solve for X game we played with Batch earlier this week, right? And throughout, you know, one thing we've thought we knew was who were the four centers on this team,
mm-hmm.
right? And if Ratu's going to win draws like this, if he's going to be an option to take, you know, strong side right-handed draws because he goes switchy for them, man, I mean, Suter can play the wing, you know, and that might throw a little bit of a wrench into sort of one of the parts of the Canucks lineup that we thought was most settled. That's my takeaway. I thought he was really good last night.
Yeah, Ratu to me right now, the simplest way to say it, I said on the post game show, he looks like an NHL player. That doesn't guarantee that he's going to be playing consistently NHL games for the Canucks, but he looks like the type of player right now where if they have to call him up and put him in the lineup, no cause for concern, right? Yeah. At least no more than you ever have with a player as young as him. But that's the level he seems to be at right now.
And just the last one for me, Canucks really surrendered a ton off the rush. And look, it doesn't matter. That game doesn't count. Players are dialed a little or a lot depending on the stakes. You know, sometimes you have a guy like Carson Soucy who's just like, I'm going to boss this preseason game.
Yeah.
But also you have games like Quinn Hughes had where it looked like he was trying stuff. You know, with his sort of first opportunity in an exhibition environment.
Yeah, Hughes looked awesome. Like, his edge work was so great. As you said, he was trying some shots from pretty far out. But even then, I thought, like, I didn't mind it because he was waiting until guys got in front of the net. And he was clearly looking for a deflection, right? He was waiting for that traffic.
Oh, I think there's more going on. I think he's literally had some, like, ideas of things that he thinks can work, and he's trying them. Mm-hmm. Like, I think this is a guy, like, step one of the IKEA shelf process. So I honestly don't think those were... like, not that they were bad shots, they were unusual shots for Hughes. But I think this is a guy who's thought a lot about how he can attack and manufacture more offense throughout the season. And I think he was, like, beginning to trial some of those shot locations.
But you're pointing out the giving up the chances off the rush. And talk it after the game, I thought, interesting thoughts about
playing
the
fast.
Conditioning as well, right? Like, and I made the comparison last night to, like, a Jurgen Klopp team that needs to be really, really in shape to keep up with the demands of his system. I heard Bruff use the Jesse Marsh. So for some reason, everyone just goes right to soccer when we talk about conditioning. I have no idea why that is, but me and Bruff both did it. But very interesting to hear him say, like, yeah, I thought we were coasting. We're going to need to work on that. If we want to play this way, it comes with certain demands. It comes with certain just physical things you have to be able to do. And I think we've tended to talk about it in kind of in terms of execution, right? Like, hey, can you get to your landmark on the breakout? Do you have that attacking mentality? But it was a good reminder. There's a purely physical side to this as well, that you have to be at the standard. And, you know, I'll also say, as we continue to, or at least I continue to bang the drum for Nils Höglander, like, hearing Tockett emphasize the fitness element makes Höglander acing the fitness testing look even better, and probably bodes even better for him going into the season.
Yeah. Yeah. Höglander, I mean, we'll see how this story unfolds over the next week, but this guy, it's going to, I find it really difficult to land on a top six answer that's not Nils Höglander for those two sort of vacant spots. Anyway, yeah, I mean, the fitness element is interesting. I also think the turning the dial element is interesting. We know that this team wants to create more off the rush. I thought they did create more off the rush. They also hit some of those breakouts that I've been talking about, like, perfectly. Absolute perfect execution on some of the different looks that they want to present to opponents running through the neutral zone or breaking out. So, you know, there was a lot of that was good, but man, they surrendered a ton the other way. And that's something this team did none of last year. Yeah, they didn't generate any rush chances themselves. They were near impossible to generate rush chances against throughout last season. When you turn the dial, when you try to loosen the reins a little bit, you're naturally going to give up some more, especially when your method to removing oxygen from the game relies so heavily on, as we talked about throughout last season, those conservative puck handling decisions, right? Controlling the game as a method of protecting the foot speed of the Canucks defense. Look, it's going to be an ongoing process, right? We didn't see the Canucks nail some of the structural elements that became who they were last season until a couple weeks into the year. Certainly, there was no evidence of what they became in the preseason, right?
Yeah.
So this is not something that's like a cause for, like, but it's a marker.
Yeah, it's not like the experiment's over.
No, it's done.
No, it's just we're going to be talking about this all year.
It's right? Not even we're concerned about the experiment. It's just a marker of the progress made so far and the distance still to travel, and a reminder that it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard for an elite defensive team whose identity is built off of conservative puck management and disciplined play up and down the lineup to buy into that, to loosen up and create more offense while maintaining what they did well. Like, that, there is a push and pull. Those elements are in tension, and watching how this club navigates it or manages it is fascinating. It just felt like a signpost worth noting on the way, because I think you're right. This is going to be a conversation all
year. Absolutely. It's going to be an ongoing storyline, right? As you said, you're going to inherently give up a little bit more coming back at you. But can you make it at least a positive exchange, right? Can you outweigh that with what you're getting going forward on the rush? And that's a tough needle to thread for any team, right? And I think that's going to be something we spend a lot of time focusing on and analyzing here for the Canucks this season. Canucks back at it tomorrow night in Seattle, then Saturday in Calgary, then Monday in Edmonton. So 3 and 4 coming up on the road here for the Canucks as their preseason schedule continues. Lineup notes today. First of all, the team's practicing at UBC. They're going to get on the ice in about 10 minutes. So we'll see if there's any interesting juggle of the lines or defense pairings that come out of that practice at UBC. Both groups are scheduled to be there. Two players placed on waivers today by the Canucks, Jet Wu and Guillaume Brisebois. That's in order for them to be assigned to AHL Abbotsford. I don't know if that foreshadows a larger round of cuts coming potentially. They do still need a fair amount of bodies, obviously, for this, at least these next three games. But Jet Wu and Guillaume Brisebois both placed on waivers by the Canucks today.
Yeah, probably tomorrow. Right. It's probably tomorrow that you let those guys clear waivers and then sort of figure it out. Jet Wu, I mean, momentarily hurt last night, but at least he got into a preseason game. Mm-hmm. Guillaume Brisebois didn't, right? Yep. And he's on a one-way deal, right? Remember, he signed that first contract that gave him that had a one-year or a one-way element. It was a few years back, and then he missed all of last season or much of last season dealing with concussion issues, and now he doesn't get a single training camp session with the main group. And doesn't get into a single preseason game before being waived. And he's on a one-way deal. Like, that's tough, man.
Yeah. And I know Sat was on Twitter after the announcement that he was on waiver saying, you know, they talked to Brisebois in Penticton. And he kind of acknowledged, I've got a long way to go still coming back from dealing with a concussion last year. But as you said, the depth chart's crowded.
Hopefully that's what it is. Because otherwise, this guy might as well be on the moon. In terms of the organization's plans based on how they've handled him, right? I mean, this isn't a depth call-up option if you're not seeing him
in
for a single
game.
Session or a single session with the main with your NHL group in training camp.
Yeah.
So I hope that there's something going on in terms of a, you know, calculated buildup. Just a tough story. Especially for a guy who's been with the organization for a long time now.
Yeah. It'll be almost a decade. Well, 2015.
He's traded for Eddie Lack.
I forget who it was on Twitter, but said the only guys left who played for the Canucks in the 2018-19 season, Pettersson, Hughes, Besser, Demko, like the building blocks, and Guillaume Brisebois. So all the best to Brisebois again, coming back from dealing with concussion issues last year and trying to get his career back on track. I realize we don't have Sean Gentile at 12:30. We have him at 1. So we've got a few extra minutes here in the betting odds. Unfortunately, no preseason lines for me to really dig into and analyze today. Do you want to do some individual Canucks season long point props, point totals off the top of your head, or do you need more time to really get into this?
You want off the top of my head?
No, like I'll read them to you and you react.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Okay. Elias Pettersson, 90.5.
Well, he had 89 last year and was terrible for not terrible. That's unfair.
He was not good.
Terrible relative to his usual standard for 30 games. So, I mean, all you're betting on is a baseline. I like that one. I typically don't like to play overs, season-long overs, as a general rule, just to admit my bias before we start, because injuries and on. But that's one that I like. I think you're basically buying the base rate, and that's what you're looking to do.
Miller, also at 90.5. These are all from Play Now, by the way.
Oh, man. So it's that one's tougher for me because I do think a lot of the production. I mean, we're talking about a 14.9% career shooter. That's an above average clip. Who shot 19.1% as an individual last season? We're talking about a guy who, I mean, had like 105.6 combined on ice shooting and on ice save percentage or PDO throughout the year, and that included a 13% on ice shooting percentage. Now, people will say stuff like, well, JT Miller's such a good shooter that he drives on ice shooting percentage. And look, that is there are rare outlier players who do meaningfully impact conversion rates for their teams. Mm-hmm. But historically, anyway, that hasn't been Miller, right? Like, historically, he's been a guy who will, like most NHL players, have seasons where a lot more goes in and seasons where a lot less goes in. So just like as an example, here's 5-on-5 on ice shooting percentage for JT Miller year over year since he joined the Canucks. 12.96% last year, 6.93% the year before, 9.65 the year before, 11.01, 10.44. Not hard to spot the outlier. It's the one that's at 13%, right? And the one that was at 7%, right? So you'd expect him to be something like 9 or 9, 10 or 11%, but when you log minutes the way JT Miller does, right? That's 520 shots. That's eight less goals that you're on the ice for. That's a lot fewer points or opportunities for you to get points on. Plus, he was the guy who had 40 power play points last year, like Besser had 25. Granted, he's on the flanks, more opportunity for secondary assists, but it's like that could easily flip. Like, what if Sprong ends up playing on the flank and they throw Miller at the net front? And so he's like, the power play as a whole is better. Miller maybe scores more power play goals, but he's not getting some of those outside touches. Mm-hmm. Eats away into it. Anyway, you sort of put it all together, and I think 90.5 is a little too high. A little too high for me. I think I'd take the over at something like 87.5 or 86.5. I feel like it's too high by 3 or 4 points, just given all the regression risk in that profile.
Okay, last one we'll do right now, and just because it's thematically appropriate and, after and last because night.
Apparently, I'm going to go for 10 minutes if you ask.
Daniel Sprong, 34.5. And of course, there's the risk of just he's not locked into a certain role or anything like that.
Just mash that over.
He's not making a lot of money. It's easy to take him out of the lineup, but he also has 43 and 46 points the last couple of years, and we were just talking about, like, man, they really want our dangerous right shot on the power play.
Just mash that over.
That seems like a pretty tasty over to me.
While averaging 12 minutes or less per game, Sprung has 43 and 46 Sprung. Points the last, what did I say?
You said Sprung.
Well, whatever. You knew who I was talking about.
What?
Sprung. I said Sprung.
You said Sprung.
I don't know. We'll listen to the tape. I don't believe you. Anyway, I don't believe you, dude. That's Jamie Dodd, but with the wrong emphasis. Anyway, under 12 minutes the last two seasons and missed 6 games and 16 games and hit 46 and 43. Like, I don't know. That one's too low. That one with some confidence, mash the over.
It's like if he plays 80 games, you crush the over. You just don't know if he's going to play 80 games. That's where the uncertainty comes in, but I agree. I'll take the over.
If you put him on PP1, if he ends up winning that opportunity, he could beat that in power play points alone.
Let's go. All right, we'll wrap it up.
I'd bet the under, by the way, on Daniel Sprong, 36 and a half power play points.
Maybe we can do some more of these in the next segment or maybe tomorrow on the whiteboard. We'll see. But we got lots more coming up here on the show. Sean Gentile going to join us at 1 o'clock. Gemma Karsten-Smith at 1:30. So an open segment next. We can continue to dive in to preseason Canucks coverage, which, by the way, preseason coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Tiletown as BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season. Receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. More Canucks talk next on Sportsnet 650.
Sprung has 43 and 46 points the last, what did I say?
You said Sprung.
Fair enough.